Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the secret guide to health when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. Now, that's according to estimates by our Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. Now, a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contained 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And each one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? You know, what are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for in the first place? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. Let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Send us an email. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto that email machine when you get there and send us your email request. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're reviewing the book, The Secret Guide to Health, written by a fellow by the name of Wayne Green. Wayne Green lives up in New Hampshire. He's an old fart like I am, 81, a little older than I am. And he wants to live to be about 120 to 150 years old. Unfortunately for him, he's an evolution guy. Reading his book here, he believes in the theory of evolution. And I don't. I'm the opposite. I'm one of those that's been evangelically challenged. That's his term, evangelically challenged. And our God, our Creator, gave us 70 years. 70 years is 25,550 days. Now, that's a guarantee. That comes under the terms of a contract. That's like having a warranty. You know, like you get you buy a new Ford pickup or new GMC a car, and they will give you a warranty. They guarantee that this car is going to run 100,000 miles or we'll fix it. Well, God gives you the same guarantee. It's 70 years. Now, sometimes people do live to be 100. There are some rare cases where people have lived to be 120 or 122, but it's not very likely that that's going to happen. If you can get your 70 years, you'll be doing pretty good. So all of you young people out there in your 20s and 30s and 40s, we say young 20, 30, 40, then this guy's got a lot to say and a lot of good information. His secret guide to health, just good common sense things like stop smoking. Only the difference is that this guy's an evangelist and he wants you to stop smoking. He's got a thing in life. He wants you to stop smoking. I don't care. I don't want you to stop smoking. I'm not interested in whether you smoke or not. Couldn't care less. If it feels good, go ahead and do it. My thing in life is that I think that everybody ought to have an alternative, that you should have all of the facts. The thing that galls me is that we're not getting all the facts. We go to school and they teach us certain information that they want us to know. And then they withhold other information. That if you had the information that is being withheld from you, you would make different decisions. Well, some of you would make different decisions. Many of you would go ahead and make the same dumb decisions that you've been making in the past. Same thing that I did. You can't make a good decision based upon half the facts. If you've got all of the information, all of the facts, then you go ahead and make your decision, it'll probably come out pretty well on point, pretty well correct. You'll probably benefit from it. But if you've only got half the facts and you make your decision, then you'll have a half-assed decision. It's just the way life is. Now, Mr. Green wants to make those decisions for you. He's come to a conclusion over here, smoking's bad for you, and therefore you need to stop smoking. I agree with Mr. Green that smoking is bad for you, but I don't think that I should make that decision for you that you should quit smoking. I don't know if smoking is good or bad for you. I think smoking's bad for me, so I quit smoking. I think that drinking to excess is bad for me, so I quit drinking to excess. I think Flo's girls are bad for all of us, and so I quit going down to Flo's, but I wouldn't tell you to do that. That's not my bag in life. I'm not an evangelist, and I don't really care what you do, but I do want to inform you. So he wrote a section in here that says, I haven't got time. And I thought it was a pretty neat little vignette. Listen to this. He said, a friend called. When he mentioned having been sick, I naturally suggested he get some books on health and make some or take some responsibility for his own body. He said he didn't have any time to read. I'm going to underline that. And the guy says, I don't have time to read it. Okay. Well, listen, the guy's probably busy. His time is taken up watching Judge Judy and Oprah. You know, there's 24 hours in a day, and I have 24 hours in my day just like you do. And I spend my day reading a certain amount of material. And this guy, Wayne Green, he pointed out that if he had something that was important, like his health, he would make time for it. Now, many people just don't have the willpower to do that. And I don't care. I mean, if you want to watch Judge Judy this afternoon, go ahead. If you want to read something and learn something that you didn't know yesterday, well, you can go do that also. Sometimes people will write me an email and say, Mr. Gordon, my God, you are so smart. Well, yeah, if you're ignorant and some guy comes along and he knows something and he tells you it makes him appear like he's real smart, the truth of the matter is I'm not all that smart. After having read Mr. Green's book over here, this guy Green probably forgot more than I'm ever going to know. This guy Green's a pretty smart guy. I can tell that he does not watch much Judge Judy or Oprah nor Howard Stern. He probably don't have much time for that. But he does have time to read, and so he reads these reports on things like fluoride. Now, the other day I got a grandson, and his mother brought him over here, and his mouth is just full of metal. I gave him root canals and metal fillings and one thing and another, and I said, Now, I didn't preach this young mother a sermon on amalgam fillings and root canals. I don't care, you know. If she wants to lower her kid's IQ by about 10 points and kill him prematurely, that's her business in life. It's her kid. You know, for all of you young mothers out there, if you want to lower your kid's IQ, feed them Infamil, feed them Good Start, feed them baby formula. My God, whatever you do, don't breastfeed them. You can lower your child's IQ by 10 points by feeding that child infant formula. I don't know. I presume that these young mothers want to lower their child's IQ, and that's why they feed them infant formula. That's my presumption. Now, when you ask these young mothers, oh, you're trying to lower your child's IQ, they look at you with a blank stare like, huh? I see you're feeding baby formula. That's guaranteed to lower your child's IQ. And they look at you like, oh, no, that's not true. I don't know where these people get their information. Obviously, they get it from some other source other than from where I'm getting mine. My information tells me that if you feed your child infant formula rather than breastfeed, you will lower his IQ by 10 points. Furthermore, if you put mercury amalgam fillings into your child's mouth, you will lower his IQ and raise his hyperactivity and cause 15 other symptoms. Well, I presume that you already know that, mothers, and that you've made a decision. Now, sometimes people say, well, I didn't know that. Well, what are these people watching? What are these people reading? Where did my information come from that is superior to yours? When I got here on the scene in 1939, I didn't know anything. My first 3 weeks on planet Earth did not improve my total fund of knowledge very damn much. I can't remember any changes in my fundamental knowledge. Hell, from the time I was 5 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, I was as dumb as a box of rocks. I started waking up to some reality about age 30, and that's the age when you get common sense. So if you're below 30, I mean, if you're under age 30 and you don't have common sense, that's understandable. You don't get good common sense until you're about 30. So in ancient times, you'll notice that the Messiah started his ministry when he was about 30, when he came of age, when he got smart. This idea that when you get to be 21, 22 years old and get a degree from college, that you got the world by the short hairs, you know, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again, son, daughter. So this thing, I haven't got time to read, you know, that comes from fools that watch too much Oprah and Howard Stern. So Green goes on, he says, I don't either. He says, I don't have any more time to read than anybody else. But knowing how important it is to my goals in life, like living as long as I can so that I can accomplish my other goals, I damn well make time. So here's this guy Green says, well, I have a goal in life, and my goal is to live to be 110 years old. So I need to live to be 110 so that I can finish these other goals that I've set. This guy Green is likely to live to be 100 years old. He's a likely candidate. And the reason for that is that when people retire, they die. This guy Green isn't retired. He's 81 years old. He's out here working every day. Now, I don't know how long I'm going to live, but I'm out here working every day. When I went to my class reunion some years back, all these people could talk about was retirement. That's all they want to do in life. They want to retire. They want to stop working. My observation of people in the world is that when they stop working, they get sick. And they don't. Their bodies deteriorate, and then they die. And I've read a number of books on the subject, and they all tell us that the more active you are, the longer you'll live, the better health you're going to have. And this guy Green points that out and points out some of the books that I've read, and I think this guy is exactly right. He's a candidate for living to be 100. Most people are not candidates to live to be 100. Now, if Green doesn't make it to 100, say he makes it to 85, 90, 95. Hell, if he retired at age 65, he'd be just about dead by now. And if he's not dead, he'd be in pretty short order. He's going to die. Now, medical advances are wonderful, but about 80% of the people that have lived to be 80 years old, I think it's 80% of 80 years old or older, have some debilitating disease. Only 20% of 80-year-olds are in good health. This guy Green is in good health at age 81. He's in that minority of 20%. I'm not sure that I want to live to be 100 in a hospital room, in a rest home, suffering from Alzheimer's disease. It would seem like to me that we want to be as healthy and vibrant as possible. Now, if I was 100, still in good health. Moses was 120 when he died, and his strength was not abated. He was in full control of his mental faculties. His body functions all worked perfectly. Now, if I could live to be 120 and I was in good health and my body functions were all in order, that'd be great. I don't want to die. I'd like to have eternal life. But my creator said, you can't have eternal life in this physical body. It's not designed well for that. So we got a down payment on a better process, a better program than this evolution. He says, I'll give you a new body. I'll give you a new spirit body over here. In order for me to give you this eternal life, though, you got to learn some valuable lessons in life. So life is a very valuable place for you to learn these lessons. Now, Mr. Green over here, he wants to change this lesson process. He wants to reform government. He says 90% of the employees in government are totally useless. Well, I agree. I think he's right. About 90% of the of all of the people that are in government are just totally useless. We don't need them. And they need to go out and find something to do, something that's more intelligent, something that produces food, clothing, and shelter. Now, that isn't going to happen. You know, fortunately for all of us, these utopian ideas that Mr. Green is putting forth over here are never going to come to fruition. Because if they did, then it would so alter and change life here on planet Earth, we suddenly would not need this life as a learning experience for eternal life in the kingdom of God. In other words, if you could get human beings to change their five motivators, if you could get people to eat so that they didn't get sick, if you could eliminate sickness and disease from the planet, hell, you've got the millennium. Then what's Jesus going to do when he gets here? I mean, what are you trying to do? Make God himself, you know, irrelevant? Now, fortunately, when the boss gets back, I think he's going to make some meaningful changes. You know, like this whole concept of the AMA. Let me point this out to you again. Dr. Richard Eby, a well-known medical leader, went to the AMA, asked why they hadn't done any research on primitive societies where the people have no cancer. And he was told by the AMA's chief counsel that the purpose of the AMA, if he'd read the bylaws, was to protect the income of the members. And since their biggest income was from cancer patients, if ever a cure for cancer was found, this could eliminate their main income. So the AMA would make sure that no cancer cure was found or allowed to be recognized in America, period. Now, there's a guy that we call God said, you know, I'm going to come back and straighten that AMA crap out. Yeah, he's got a good point there. And on this food thing that Mr. Green is pointing out here, it's right. We Americans, we have a very poor diet, and it makes us sick, and it makes us obese, and it kills us at a premature age. But if we didn't have that, how would you people learn? You know, quite frankly, most of you people need Alzheimer's disease, cancer, and heart attack and stroke. So that when you come up in the resurrection, and the boss says, hey, Bob, Sally, did you learn anything from that? You'll be able to say, oh, yeah, I did. I learned that when you eat fat, it plugs up your arteries. And when your arteries are plugged up, it causes god-awful pain when you die from a heart attack, or it's very debilitating when you have a stroke and your right side doesn't work. See, you can learn from that. Now, if we all followed Mr. Green's premise over here, and we did that voluntarily up front now, you'd never get a heart attack or a stroke. You wouldn't get cancer. How in the hell are you going to learn anything unless you suffer, unless you get sick? So, you know... I'm just a reporter. I come here to report on facts. Now, you know, there's a God in heaven working out a plan. He's got a purpose down here on planet Earth. The reason that you people get sick is so that you can learn from them. Mr. Green has already learned. In fact, in his book, he points out that much of his life, I think the first 50 years, he said he was overweight. In fact, to use his words, he says, I was just plain fat. So after looking back over 50 years, Mr. Green looked at that and he said, you know, I've come to a conclusion. This fat's bad for me. And so he reduced. He lost. And he points this out. He's got a section here on dieting and diets. He said 2% of people who diet can diet and keep it off. He says, I'm one of that 2%. The other 98% of you can't do that. And that's because you don't eat correctly. Well, Mr. Green learned his lesson, and now at age 81, he's slim trim. He's learned how to knock it off and keep it off. He's eating correctly. He has accomplished what his creator, of course, his creator is evolution, but what the creator has designed in his brain, gave him a brain to think with, and Mr. Green used his brain. He thought with it. He took a look at it. He also came to another conclusion. He says, I don't want to die from cancer, and I don't want to die from Alzheimer's disease. He talks about his mother here in the book being strapped to a chair, dying from Alzheimer's disease. He said, I don't want to do that. In the last program, I mentioned that to you. I saw a guy smoking through the hole in his throat, and I said, I don't want to do that. That motivated me to quit smoking. You probably need something to motivate you from smoking. I can't think of a better motivator than death. Boys and girls, when you get lung cancer and you die from lung cancer, you're going to learn a very, very valuable lesson. When you get Alzheimer's disease and you're that person who's lost his mind and you're rocking back and forth like Mr. Green's mother, he points out that his mother spent the last years of her life tied to a chair. Now, if the rest of us can't look at that and learn from that woman's mistakes, then we're bound to repeat her mistakes. You can rest assured that his mother, when she comes up in the resurrection and the boss says, hey, Mrs. Green, did you learn anything from that Alzheimer's lesson? Unless that woman is, you know, brain dead or something, she's going to say, you bet, I learned from that. Okay. Now, Mrs. Green, let's talk about aluminum cookware. Let's talk about aluminum in your deodorant. You see, experience is the best teacher. My daddy explained that to me. He said, experience is the best teacher. Son, you can't find a better experience. You can't find a better teacher than experience. Then he cautioned me. He said, but son, it's a god-awful hard way to learn. God-awful hard way to learn. Most of us can't learn except through experience. And that's why we're here. That's why we have these experiences. Now, if you can learn from other people's bad results, oh, by all means, do it. My dad explained that to me, too. He said, son, the next time you have one of these harebrained ideas, he thought, you know, when I was 12, 14 years old, he thought my ideas were harebrained. And he said so. He said, next time you have one of these harebrained ideas, run it by me first, and I'll tell you how it came out when I did it. That's what this guy Green's done. He said, you know, most of us could learn from just reading a good book. Now listen to this. Books such as those that are reviewed later in this book and in my wisdom guide can help extend your life onto 100 or more. For me, that's another 25 to 50 years to learn and teach. And like most other people, I was brainwashed by my family and by our school system into believing that high school followed by college was the way to become educated. Experience has taught me the long, hard, expensive way that you can learn more from a good book in a few hours than you can in college in many weeks. And the stuff that you'll learn will probably be of infinitely more valuable to you in your business and in your life than anything you'll pass memorization tests on in college. Now, you don't have to go to class to learn about radio and electronics. What you need is to do, or what you need to do is read some books on electronics, and you'll soon know more than the teachers. We have become so brainwashed that few people ever even think to question the value of college. Now, my parents never did go to college. Heck, my father came along at World War I, and he missed college. He went to New York Military Academy, and from there he went into the Army as an officer. That got him into aviation with the Army Air Corps. But he always felt the lack of a college degree, even when he was busy starting new airlines. He started three airlines, including the first transatlantic airline. In just a few weeks of reading books by the world's top brains, you can become an expert on almost anything. Now, I'm just a punk, pimply-faced kid, you know, compared to Mr. Green, but in my experience, I came to the same conclusion. Now, I don't spend any time watching Howard Stern, Judge Judy, or Oprah. And instead, I spend my time reading. And I read reports that come in off the internet, or I read books and articles and periodicals and things like that. I never let a day go by that I don't learn something new that I didn't know before. So when I read this fellow's book, Green, and I read his little short sections, little vignettes here, on things like fluoride and chlorine in our water, I say to myself, aha, now here's another guy that knows about fluorine and chloride, or chlorine and fluoride, and he drinks distilled water. This guy Green drinks distilled water. He does not drink the tap water. You know, Green, if you keep doing that, you're liable to live to be 100 years old. You're liable to achieve your goal. Now, for the rest of you people out there that are still on fluoride and chlorine and so on, let me pass this on to you. You come here to my school, and you sit here in my class, and I tell you some of these things, like fluoride and chlorine are bad for you, and you people living in the cities are probably going to die young. And that's because you bathe in this stuff, and your skin is your body's biggest single organ of elimination. This is where you perspire, you sweat through your skin, and your body is exuding toxins, and it's a very valuable organ. You know, I call it the miracle of random selection. Can you imagine how many skins, bodies had to go through in order to perfect or to develop this? It just made more sense to me that it was engineered and designed by a master creator. Well, this same body, this same skin on your body also absorbs poisons. And Mr. Green points out that when you rub on deodorant on your underarms, because you stink bad. Well, did it ever occur to you that maybe you stink bad because of what you eat? I mean, you know, picture this. If you eat a garlic, just take a clove of garlic, plunk it in your mouth, chew it up real good and swallow it. And then go over and kiss your wife. And she'll turn up her nose and she'll say, "Oh my God, your breath stinks." Do you sit there and say to yourself, "Gosh, I just can't understand why I've got bad breath. It's a mystery to me." And so you're watching TV and some guy says, "What you need is scope. You need this deodorant. You need Listerine. You need this something or other to make your breath smell better." You know, if you didn't eat that garlic, your breath wouldn't smell bad to start with. Now, it just happens that garlic's a pretty good food, and I eat a little garlic once in a while, but it's not a mystery to me as to why my breath smells like garlic after I eat garlic. Well, now, if your underarms stink, it's because of the meat that you're eating. You eat too much meat. Now, here in America, we eat a lot of meat, 247 pounds a year. Now, we really need about 3 ounces a day. So if you were going to get all of your protein from meat, and there's 365 days in a year times 3, would be 1,095 ounces of meat divided by 16 would be 68 pounds of meat. Now, you're eating 247. So we take 247, take away 68 from that, and you're eating 179 pounds of meat too much every year, you and me and everybody else. Now, meat tastes real good. And, you know, we figure here in America that if it tastes good, you know, a little twice as much must taste twice as good. If a little bit's good for us, then twice as much has got to be twice as good for us than if we ate half as much. And so we eat too much meat. And then we stink real bad, so then we rub on Arid Extra Dry under our arms, and we're rubbing this aluminum sulfate onto our skin, which is then absorbed by our bodies, and then we wonder why we get Alzheimer's disease. And this guy Green points out, here's why. Let me explain it to you in these little vignettes. And then he goes a step further. And he cites the book with the author, and he says, "This is where I learned that. I've been meaning to do that." You know, a lot of times I come on the air, I review a book, or I will cite from some source and say, "Well, here's where that's at." And I've been meaning to sit down and write a book just like Mr. Green did, where I could point out, you know, like aspartame, and then show you the 4 or 5 sources of information that if you would just read, if you would just shut off Judge Judy, and if you would just read this one article on aspartame, you'd become as smart as I am, and then you'd avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. But I know how valuable, I know how important Oprah, Judge Judy, and Howard Stern are to you. And this guy Green doesn't. He does not understand how important 3 hours of your time watching these three television programs and how educational they are and how much you learn from them and how much better person you are after watching Howard Stern, Oprah, and Judge Judy. And that's why you don't know about Arid Extra Dry, aluminum, I like that word, aluminum. That's what one of my neighbors called it, aluminum. That's aluminum sulfate, and how that is absorbed by your body and causes Alzheimer's disease. You know, it's nothing personal. But you people need to learn, and the best way for you to learn is from experience. And when you experience Alzheimer's disease, bypass surgery, or cancer, you're going to learn a lesson. You're probably going to learn a lesson that you can't learn any other way. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 112 countries daily over the internet and radio worldwide. Now, for more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed as well through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will reciprocate. Just keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can just call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, The Secret Guide to Health, and it's written by Wayne Green. You can get a copy directly from him. I imagine you probably get this book, I guess. And you can get it from Barnes & Noble. Has it got an ISBN? This thing might be self-published. Sometimes people publish their own books, and they just bypass the mainstream media altogether. And that's what it looks like. But that's what it looks like this guy Green's done. He's published this book himself. Well, what kind of a lunatic fringe would publish his own book? Doesn't he know about Bantam, huh? If you want a copy of it, you write to Wayne Green. He's got a phone number, too, at 603-588-0107. And I think that's his number. That's what my student wrote in here. And that is 603-588-0107. Call him up first and ask him what the price is. Or you can write to him at Box 360, Hancock, New Hampshire. Hancock, New Hampshire, 03449. And that zip code again is 03449. Now, he's got a catalog. If you don't already have a catalog of my books, let me know and I'll send you one. Or you can ask for one by way of info@waynegreen.com. This guy's got a website. Imagine that. You can go to info@waynegreen.com. It's also on my website, www.waynegreen.com. Oh, for crying out loud. Can you imagine anything easier than that? It's just waynegreen.com. I'll bet you that guy's got his catalog online and you could probably look it up and see some of his other publications. This is the only book I've read from this guy. They're really good. I mean, just really good common sense. If you like to read from old farts, you know, read books written by old farts, that all you young people know don't know anything, this guy here, has got that old folk wisdom. He's kind of like my Aunt Bessie, my Uncle Buster. And let me get you another story in here. This guy's just full of good stories, like the CIA, the major drug importer. Come on, the CIA being a major drug importer? It's on page 208. Down at the bottom of each one of these pages, there's a number. So if you just flip over here to page 208, we can look here at more drug nonsense. While you were sleeping, the DEA's budget has grown from $3.1 billion in 1982 to $19.2 billion today. And what have the results been? Our daily headlines and TV exposés of the drug enforcement agency scandals, drug busts gone terribly wrong, and more drugs than ever being available. The biggest beneficiaries of this Congress-instigated corruption are the CIA, said by many informants to be the biggest drug importer in the world. The mafia, drug gangs, and a few Colombia multi-billionaires. The easy money in this enormously profitable business keeps many inner-city kids from being interested in education or honest work. After all, education and honest work is for suckers. Now, who are the patsies paying for all of this big scam? Well, it's all the rest of us. The CIA, a major drug importer? Ah, come on. Is nothing sacred? Yes, one thing, our gullibility in believing what we see on TV and read in our newspapers. So read Bushwhacked by Yuri Dalbenko and The Conspirators by Al Martin and Wise Up, and read how the CIA smuggled in over 6,000 tons of cocaine last year. Oh, excuse me, wrong number. It's 1,000 tons of cocaine last year. That 6 doesn't belong. Let me underline that. Let me read it to you again. You can read how the CIA smuggled in over 1,000 tons of cocaine last year with the proceeds funding the operations that they don't want Congress to know about. Oh, you know, like rendition maybe, or maybe they've got other programs that we shouldn't be hearing about. And then they fund those with the drug proceeds. 1,000 tons of drugs. Now, I don't know what a ton of drugs is worth. I don't have a clue. I'd have to call some of my sources and find out what the street price of cocaine, marijuana, and such is. But I have a druggist student. I have a student of mine who's a druggist. Get this. You can buy cocaine, heroin, and marijuana from your local Rexall drugstore. Oh, yes. All three are available. They're all prescribed by your friendly family doctor. They're not called cocaine, heroin, and marijuana. Those are the street names for the drugs that are called by patented names when they're sold by your local drug dealer, your local family doctor, through the local drug syndicate, also known as Osco Buttery and Rexall. All right, but here's the kicker. When you buy legal cocaine, it costs 6 times more than the street variety. When you buy the patented heroin, it costs 6 times more than the street variety. And when you buy marijuana from your local family doctor, he doesn't sell marijuana. He's got another name. It's a patented name, but it's 6 times more expensive. This is why the drug business in America is so lucrative and it is so beneficial to the economy. And that is because it's illegal. If drugs were legalized, the prices would collapse. Boys and girls, if you had legalized heroin, cocaine, and marijuana, the entire drug industry would collapse. Why? Well, because who in the hell is going to pay 6 times more at Rexall for what you can buy from Joe down on the street corner? So, you know, the people that are using these drugs recreationally are smart enough to figure out there's no sense paying 6 times more to go argue with your family doctor than when I go down on the street corner and buy it from Joe. Now, to show you how immensely profitable marijuana is here in the United States, I can't speak for the rest of the world, but here in the United States, I got some numbers. We have several big agricultural crops here in the United States: wheat, corn, soybeans, and cotton. But those four big mainstream government-sponsored, subsidized crops are not as big as marijuana, which is the number one selling crop in America. $37 billion a year. It's probably double that. Those are the estimates that are given out by the DEA. That's the Drug Enforcement Agency. All right. Now, the wheat's around $30 billion a year, and corn and cotton and soybeans, you know, they're around $30 billion, and marijuana tops them all. Here's the kicker, though. See, marijuana is illegal. It doesn't get any government subsidies. So the taxpayers are not paying the marijuana growers in any set-aside program or paying them price supports. They don't need it. And it shows you how well the free market works. Now, that's a novelty. See, here in America, we don't have a free market in anything. Our markets here are all government-controlled. The wheat market is government-controlled. Corn, government-controlled. The prices that it's sold for and the prices that the farmers receive, they're all mandated, they're all spelled out by government policy. And all of those farmers are in trouble. They're in debt. They're getting taxpayer subsidies. And God knows they need it. They couldn't survive without them. But the marijuana growers, just using the free market supply and demand, can put marijuana on the street for 1/6 the price of Merck and Pfizer. And they have the biggest agricultural crop in America with absolutely no cost to the taxpayers whatsoever. Now, that's the miracle of free enterprise. So I just want to pass that one on to you so you know. Now, if you wheat farmers ever got into free enterprise for wheat, you corn farmers, soybean, cotton, I mean, if you could ever get the government out of your business and get into just supply and demand, free enterprise, and get off the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, you too could have the same success the marijuana growers are experiencing. And I can't think of a better way to do that than to outlaw wheat, corn, soybeans, and cotton. Make it illegal. Make it a crime. And then you're going to see, you'll see a revolution in those four industries. Every time you make something illegal, then you turn it into, it's like the numbers racket. See, at the turn of the century, the numbers racket was a free enterprise system which was being run by private industry. Government took a look at it and said, my God, look what we could do with the numbers racket if we could take it over. So they outlawed it. They said, this is a criminal activity, playing the numbers racket. And so they changed the name, copyrighted it, and they may now call it the lottery. It is so much bigger than the numbers racket when it was in private hands as to make it inconceivable. And so now they've legalized this enterprise, and it's called the numbers racket, but we call it the lottery. It's the same numbers racket, but we just renamed it and called it the lottery. See how that works? And we put all the private entrepreneurs, you know, the Cosa Nostra and the Mafia, out of business. So we, you know, now those guys are out on the streets really raising hell with us. They were selling us lottery tickets, and now they're out here running shakedowns. You know, they come into your store and they say, hey, you need to buy your insurance this week, and if you don't, your store's going to burn down. Serious things. All right, now I covered mass murder by the AMA. The CIA is the major drug importer in the United States. I mean, the CIA brings more drugs, you know, into the United States than anybody else in the business. 1,000 tons a year. All right, so let's. Now, hospital infections kill. Iatrogenic disease, misdiagnosis, cut out the wrong lung, the wrong cure, Parkinson's versus aspartame, so on. You know, these prescribed drugs kill 100,000 people a year. Did you know that? Let me turn over to page 211. Here's page 209, 10, here's page 211. Listen to this. Doctors at work. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, properly prescribed drugs for properly diagnosed disease kills over 100,000 patients a year. That's 2,000 a week. The doctors in America prescribing drugs for you patients out there kill 2,000 people a week. Now, we have a very, very big drug enforcement agency that, thank you, Mr. Green, we now know is spending $19 billion a year. This is the DEA. Congress now appropriates $19 billion a year to fight illegal drugs. They don't spend 5 cents fighting medical doctors who are prescribing the wrong drugs. Now, it is nice to know that the DEA is out there spending $19 billion a year because the illegal drugs in America that are not properly prescribed, that are not properly monitored and watched and evaluated, kill 6,000 people a year. Ladies and gentlemen, illegal drugs in America kill 6,000 people a year. And we need to do something about that. God knows that it's a god-awful, terrible problem. Congress weighed in on the problem. The president weighed in on it. We have a drug czar in this country. We spend $19 billion a year to protect the American people from illegal drugs, for which the CIA brings in 1,000 tons a year to fund their black operations. I don't know, Mr. Green. I don't know. There's something about that strikes me as being bizarre, don't you? I mean, here's our government sneaking in 1,000 tons a year of illegal drugs. And then we spend $19 billion a year fighting these illegal drugs. This guy Green comes up and says, I think we could just do away with about 90% of these federal employees. Yeah, you know, I could buy into that. That makes sense. But hey, we haven't hit the kicker yet. Listen to the kicker. Legal drugs. Legal. I mean, that's the stuff that's advertised in Reader's Digest, like Zoloft, you know, and these prescription drugs. They kill 100,000 people a year. How many times is that? Take 100. I'll use my famous Sharp EL1197G3 Texas Instruments calculator. Plug in 100 divided by 6. And the answer is 16.66. Every once in a while, I'll do that here in class. And while I'm punching my keyboard over here, some guy comes up with the answer. And he says, that's 16.66. And I'm just amazed. My God, I just dumbfounded. Well, that's what happens when you go to public school. See, they handicapped you. Hell, I couldn't figure that out without my Sharp EL1197G3. All right, now get this. The legal drug dealers, that is your doctors, pharmacists, they kill 100,000 people a year with legal drugs, and the illegal drug dealers kill 6,000 people a year. Nobody's spending a nickel to find out what we can do about saving 100,000 lives a year from the legal drug pushers called the medical doctors. Now, they kill 16 times more people than do the illegal guys, and we're spending $19 billion a year. Well, let's try it out this way. Let's take 19 times 6. We should be spending $114 billion a year so that we can monitor doctors, so that we can do something for the 100,000 people a year that are being killed by your doctors and pharmacists and hospitals that nobody gives a rat's you-know-what about. What I can't figure out is how come. It looks like to me as a businessman, just as a businessman, it looks like to me that if I had something that was losing money, for instance, my Deccan Riser operation, that was it wasn't a money loser, but it wasn't a big money maker. And then I had frames. And my frames over here was a big money maker. And I spend a big portion of my budget over here working on frames, and I totally ignore my Deccan Risers. You know, it would seem like to me that where you have the biggest problem is where you want to spend the most resources, wouldn't you think? It would seem like to me, just as a businessman, that if I had 100,000 people a year dying from a cause over here that I can identify, quantify, weigh it, see it, taste it, touch it, smell it, categorize it, document it, and then I got a problem over here that's 16 times less serious, that I would concentrate my resources on that big problem rather than the little one. Here in America, we're spending $19 billion a year on 6,000 people dying, and we don't spend a nickel on 100,000 people dying. Now, Mr. Green did some good work here. And God love you, Mr. Green, but you didn't get all the facts and figures here on the number of people that are being killed by these doctors, because the AMA admits that it's 130,000 a year, not 100,000. So you're off here by about a third, 25% anyway. And that's what those bastards admit to. You got that? That's what they admit to. The real number is two or three times higher than that. And there are other organizations out here that say, no, it's not 100,000 or 130,000. It's more like 200,000, 260,000. And then there's another group over here that says, no, it's more like pushing 400,000 a year. And that's just from drugs. And that's not all that the doctors are killing, because the hospitals and the medical establishment, when you get down on the bottom line, right down on the bottom, They're killing another 100,000 people a year. Well, not quite. They don't admit to 100, but they do admit to 94,000 a year that are dying from infections in the hospital. As you go into the hospital because you need to have gallbladder surgery, and you come out with a staph infection and die from pneumonia. Now, that's killing another 100,000 people a year. And then you got iatrogenic disease. That's where the doctor, he misses the diagnosis. See, he says you got Parkinson's disease, but really what you got is aspartame poisoning. He missed the diagnosis, and so that kills another 100,000 a year. And that's what they're admitting to. The real numbers are two or three times higher than that. So Mr. Green, in his book, with these real neat little vignettes over here, he points out that what about the death toll from properly prescribed drugs from improperly diagnosed diseases and deaths from improperly prescribed drugs? Another JAMA, JAMA they call it here, that's the Journal of the American Medical Association. Yeah, hell, you can get this information, boys and girls, right from the killers themselves. I mean, that's like getting the statistics published by Murder Incorporated. Here's how many people we're offing every year. Here's the numbers. Here's the statistics. And it's reported right here. I mean, yeah, I have to chuckle a little bit. It's reported right here in the Secret Guide to Health. Hey, let's go visit our doctor. Huh? Just makes you want to check into the hospital, doesn't it? That's Wayne Green's Secret Guide to Health, reviewed here on The Law Hour and Editorial Review. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, eight schools in all. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian, non-commercial law school. It is open to individuals, but by pre-arrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.